According to a 2023 study made by the Institute of Made Up John Facts, no podcast has ever gone longer than four seasons. But today, all chains will be broken as we enter season five of
Trapped Under Plastic, the podcast where creamy groin blends could mean two different things.
Creamy groin blends. That's good.
That's good. Welcome to 2024, the new edition of Trapped Under Plastic, which isn't new at all. It's entirely the same.
Or is it? Today we're going to find out. Answer that question.
You guys are going to find out, and so are we.
Because you know as much as we know.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's potential that we will say what we're going to do, and then you guys have to hold us to it.
We might discover a new segment this podcast episode. We have no idea.
Yeah, because, you know, we're mulling around segments.
Yeah.
So goody pee-pees of the world. Like, if there's a segment that you think needs to exist on Trapped Under Plastic.
I feel like we've asked this question like 14 times.
I know, and every time everyone's like,
you know what, just shut up and talk, funny man. That's all that matters to us.
Dance for me, clown.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and they have great ideas. Yeah. So tell them to us again, because we forget. Scotty Poo, so we had a little bit of a break.
We did.
Over the holidays.
We did.
We're now firmly into January 2024. What did you do in your time away?
I got up to some shenanigans for sure. I write reviews for every movie I watch, and so I started to do the same thing kind of for all the games that I play throughout the year. I'm not writing reviews, I'm just like logging them when I play them on Board Game Geek has like a little app you can log stuff on. And so I got after some, I played some Mysterium, I played some a game called Glitch Squad. I played some Guild Ball. I played some Star Wars Imperial Assault. I played some Dune Imperium. The new year has rung in lots of gameplay.
Lots of gameplay.
Yeah.
Like. Wow. So do you have like a, is this like a regular weekly group? Is it always the same players when you play these games? Is it just kind of ad hoc? I want to play this. Who can play? When can you play? Is it?
It's a mixture of all those things. So I definitely have a monthly board game group where we play a campaign-driven game. Like you have like every 2 weeks?
Every Saturday.
Every Saturday. Yep. So I got one of those playing Jaws of the Lion. Got another mission in. That game still fucks. I love it. And then
it's crunchy to the max.
It's good. I love it.
That's kind of crunch.
And then we also, I went on a little boys retreat. little boys.
Wait. There were no little boys there, right? I'd like this podcast to continue.
There was no island involved. That was a bad joke. There was.
Everybody was over the age of 25. Can you say that?
Yeah. It was me and two other friends, and we went to my friend's lake house in Minnesota. It's like 2 hours away. And the plan was to play the entirety of Star Wars Imperial Assault. I feel like I've started so many campaign-driven board games, and I haven't finished any of them. And so I just wanted to like get like super far through an entire campaign-driven game, and I felt like just doing it all in a weekend was like the best way to do that.
In theory, it sounds like it would
be. Yeah. And so it worked out. So the game has been around for so long, Star Wars Imperial Assault, and so like there are like seven different ways to play the game. And the main way you play is you play as one character is the Empire, and everyone else is an individual rebel character that levels up and gets new skills and stuff. And we all wanted to play together. And so there's another way to play the game called Legends of the Alliance, where it's an AI-driven empire, and you all play together. But the thing I didn't know about that before playing it was that because it's not a wholly supported version of the game, the campaign is honestly pretty short. It was like 5 or 6 missions, and then we finished it. We actually finished it before the end of like our thing, and so
you're just like sitting around the table, like, so what do we do now?
Now what? we did bring some Dice Throne, some Flesh and Blood, and some Dune Imperium. So we had some more games to play.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess we officially finished the game, but there wasn't a lot of it. But what there was a lot of good gameplay, so it was definitely enjoyable. Recommend it still. I know it's kind of old. It's like a decade old, but it was a lot of fun.
There's something to be said with a kind of a campaign-style game that doesn't require months and months to complete, though, too.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. It's good because you get like a nice sense of accomplishment, and then you want to play like the other ones. It was $90, and so it felt like not the greatest use of money. But like, I bet if we played the normal version of the game or someone was an empire, it would have taken a lot longer.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then it's a totally different game experience kind of too. So you're dealing with more co-op versus, you know, versus kind of a game. And so you can still get your money out of it or sit in your cupboard and you'll be like, I played it, and eventually I'll sell it or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Either way, it's just at some point I run this like imaginary math equation in my head of like, how much space does this board game take up in my house versus how likely am I to play it anymore? That's a tough equation to solve.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely got a couple games in the closet that probably don't need to be there anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But yeah, it was a good time. We watched horror movies as well. I brought that projector screen we use for our classes.
Yes.
And I had a buddy bring his speakers, and we watched that, and that was awesome. And it was just like we slept, we ate, we played board games, we watched movies, and that was it, just on a cycle.
On a full rotation.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a fun weekend, honestly.
It wasn't bad. It was definitely enjoyable.
But the great thing is you can have that weekend whether you're 8 or 88.
It works.
And honestly, I remember when I was like in 5th or 6th grade, going to a friend's house, and one friend who his mom didn't care that we watched like rated R scary movies.
Oh, he was the friend to go to.
Yeah, yeah. So we'd go to his house, and we'd play regular Nintendo, and then we'd stay up late and eat terrible foods, and then he had a Pamela Anderson poster on his wall too. I remember that.
Dude, when you're like 12 years old and there's like prime
didn't register, you know, prime Pamela Anderson from Baywatch on the wall. It was the greatest house
that
ever.
Did not register. I was like, I wasn't fully engaged in what you were saying, and I was like, oh, he has a poster somewhere, like whatever. And I was like, oh, Pamela Anderson. Okay, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
no,
you grew up in the 80s and 90s,
right?
You
yeah.
knew who Pamela Anderson was.
Yeah, Pamela Anderson and Paris Hilton, all that stuff.
Yeah,
all the boys talked about those two women.
Occasionally, one of their neighbors had a Super Nintendo because the Super Nintendo was new, and he'd come over and bring Mario Kart,
okay.
And that was like the highlight of my year was playing Mario Kart. And then we watch scary movies, and I just get so fucking scared.
Dude, yeah.
And you're just like wide awake at 2 a.m, like, hey, I close my eyes.
That still happens when you're a 30-year-old, apparently. Yeah, we watch like 4 horror movies, and I have to go sleep in this room upstairs by myself, and I'm just like, okay, well, I'm gonna die, surely.
Yes, you hear everything.
Yeah,
non-existent, like shadows and shit. It's funny, you were talking about on your stream, I think it was last week, you mentioned it gave me a level of PTSD. You mentioned the film Blair Witch Project.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You need to be, you got to be in a certain headspace not headspace, but like, I don't know. Yes, that movie fucked me up a little bit when I watched it, yeah.
Okay, so I saw that movie in the theaters.
Oh, yeah, that would fuck you up.
on opening weekend.
Yeah, dude.
And
that's
so,
the best experience.
At this time, there was no intranets. You didn't know. Fuck it. The movie's 20 years old. I'm not spoiling anything. I'm not going to tell you the premise of the movie. You didn't know it wasn't real.
Yeah.
I didn't know it wasn't real.
That's it. That's
okay.
It.
So my buddy Blair and I, Blair, who edits this podcast,
yeah,
we went to that movie together.
Fuck.
In his old like fucking boat Cutlass Supreme, those things that are like those cars that are like 70 feet long and they only have 2 doors.
Nice.
We got some stories about that vehicle as well. But we went to that movie. He drops me back off at my parents' house because, again, I think it had been in high school at the time, or maybe it was in college and home for the holidays or something. Either way, he drops me off. And I have never had a scarier 15 seconds of my life than it's pitch dark out. My parents live in the fucking country, in the woods, and going from his car to my front door, getting out the keys to unlock the house, I thought for sure I was dead.
Yeah.
For sure. I have never been more scared of a non-existent thing. Like, there are scarier times in your life where you're like, oh shit, I actually could die right now.
Could die,
but, like,
yeah.
But of just in your own head, that movie, I have not watched it since. I don't know if I could. It's so fucking scary. It's so scary, especially in the theater when it's pitch dark, full like surround, and you're just like, you can't escape it.
No, dude. Yeah. It's fucking scary. And when I watched it during the dawn of the internet, They set up stuff after the fact where if you went to look it up, there were fake websites that that showed that this was a real thing. People are researching what happened here. And it's like, oh my God, it's kind of fed like the everything. It fed the whole experience.
Yeah. I don't know if I've watched, because you talked about found footage movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of like, I don't know. It's assuredly not the first found footage movie, but it's the first one that I ever remember hearing or seeing.
I feel like maybe it is the first one. Maybe like there's some even more obscure, weirder one, it's the first popular one, I think we can safely say.
Yeah. I just assume that that there is some version that predated it, that it would be like something that like Gabe from The Office would watch because he is really interested in these obscure, shitty horror movies.
Yeah, definitely.
That he would like that.
Absolutely. Did you see the actor who plays Gabe? He made an Instagram reel and he was like, there's a lot of celebrities out there who are like doing sponsored content on Instagram. Like Dua Lipa got $2,000 last year off a sponsored deal. So I want to start doing it. And he makes an ad for cinnamon broomsticks. Is happening here, but no. Anyways, go on. What
you saying? Man! But then I realized that just last week I often will put on the free movies on YouTube.
Yeah, dude, you love those.
I love the. If you don't know about YouTube movies, just go to YouTube and just type in movies. Just type in movies.
I love how just straightforward that is.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't that work?
It will take you to a YouTube channel called YouTube Movies.
Is this a YouTube thing?
Yeah, it's an official YouTube thing.
Okay.
I'm not like watching pirated ones. They have YouTube Movies, and they have a ton of free ones. And they're like the quality of, if you watched it on probably, they're 1080p, so they're not terrible.
Yeah, I imagine, yeah.
So they're like the original quality, and they rotate them out all the time. So I rewatched the original Cloverfield.
Okay, yeah.
Which is, I didn't kind of really think about it, because it's been a year since I watched it. That's a found footage movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And watching that a second time, I'm like, oh man, this is not that good.
Yeah.
I remember really thinking it was cool when I first saw it, and I'm like, man, this is not that good.
There's definitely a lot of shock and awe factor to watching a found footage movie the first time.
Yes.
I've never rewatched them ever. The only one I've rewatched is a movie called Wreck. You ever seen Wreck?
Mm-mm.
It's a movie that inspired another movie called Quarantine. You see Quarantine?
Yes.
Yeah, so Wreck is the Spanish version of Quarantine, essentially. It's the same exact movie.
I thought you were going to say that it was the movie that inspired Wreck-It Ralph.
No.
I really like Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Although Cloverfield Lane. Do you ever see Cloverfield Lane with John Goodman?
Yeah, that one is good.
That one is really good.
That one's really good.
Yeah, I love me some John Goodman.
I didn't see the first one, though. I didn't see Cloverfield, though.
It's worth watching. It's worth watching. But Cloverfield Lane is better.
Okay.
You don't need to watch the first one, apparently, to watch the second one.
Yeah, I felt okay watching the second one because I remember hearing that when I went to go see the second one.
It's like, it having watched them both, you'll understand they like take place in the same universe.
Kind of,
but that's all you really know.
Okay.
I had things to talk about. Oh, you're talking about games.
Yes.
I'm into Oathsworn.
Yes.
So we had a little break. So we had a little break because I had Vinci Conto was gone for a week, and then it came back. And we started Oathsworn. We took a whole evening. So we play every Saturday night. And it took us a whole evening for setup because they have one of those gaming tables Dan and Alexa do where they have you can put the tops on it. So it's like a full-size dining table.
Yeah.
But then there's a full gaming space underneath, and you can just put the Leafs back on top, and then it's a regular table. So to tear down all of Bardsung and set up all of Oathsworn took us a full evening and kind of going through rules and figuring out picking our characters and everything. And then we went the second Saturday, we made it through the first, the whole city phase, and then got to the first fight. And then this last week we started the fight. We didn't finish it, but we're a good bit into it. And that was the combat's it's legit.
Does it feel good?
It feels really good.
Okay, cool.
And there's three of us. And the cool thing about Oathsworn is that, and I really appreciate when games do this, it is set for four players.
Okay.
So no matter how many people are sitting at your table, there are going to be four characters in your group.
And someone's going to control two, kind of thing?
Yeah. So what it is, there's three of us, so I control two. And then Dan helps Alexa control hers. In all the games, we both help Alexa. She's had a couple of strokes, so some stuff is, it takes her a little bit longer, so we help her out. But she still, once she gets the hang of the game, she still is full control of her character.
Sure.
But that seemed like a good split up. Two things on this. One, I appreciate when games do this because a lot of games, they have it like, well, you can play it with 2 to 5 or blah, 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 and then we'll kind of tweak our rule system based on the number of characters that are in the game. And I can't tell you how much that can have such a vast influence on your experience on a game, because games are all tested and all rules are all designed around a certain number of variables.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically it's like 3 or 4. It's like, this is how the game is built. And then we figure out ways that we can add some variety to that. But the further you get away from that core gameplay, how it was designed and balanced, the more it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Some games are pretty good about it. Some games are not. But you kind of honestly don't really know how far away you are from the true difficulty and the true experience. And so I like Kingdom Death does the same thing. You are always going out with 4 survivors.
Okay.
Because the game is so tightly kind of balanced around that number and strategies around that. And so this is the same way, and I appreciate it. The second thing I want to say about this that Osorn does is really cool is they have a companion system. So the character that I'm playing, that's not my main dude, I'm doing obviously the big giant bear.
Bear, yeah, okay, yeah, nice.
Fucking, you know, Fred Bear. He's the best. But then we have an archer, because of our other three, we have Dan's kind of a paladin. Dan loves paladins. Alexa is a rogue. Or it's called the Cur, which is a great name.
Okay.
The Cur.
Yeah.
And so we have a rogue. We've got a tank. I found out, like, I'm kind of tank slash DPS. We didn't have anybody range. So our fourth one, we picked the archer.
Yep. Shoring up some of your inefficiencies.
Yeah. But you can play any character that you pick of your four. Can either be a full character or a companion character. And what that does is it pairs down and it changes the rules of the game. So they're much more streamlined and their turns go faster. But they still feel and have a similar power level at the table.
Okay.
So they're not any more powerful, less powerful. They're just kind of streamlined. So it's great that you can, like, if you want to play this game solo, you could play, like, one, your main character, and then you have your party. That just
three companion characters.
Three companion characters.
Okay.
Or any combination. You can play with just by yourself with 4 full characters if you wanted to. So anyway, yeah, really enjoying it. Very impressive.
I'm glad.
You talk about Jaws of the Lion
with
Gloomhaven, and immediately I see some connections to Gloomhaven, but I will say we're very early on, but like I'm enjoying the story, the lore, your interaction outside of combat in this game much more than Jaws of the Lion or the Gloomhaven. That game seemed like the world, all these things are happening, you're just kind of there, you're just kind of like, oh, okay.
But not affecting it really.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like you're very invested or connected.
Okay.
But obviously the game makes up for it so hardcore and how great the actual combat and campaign system is. This, it feels a nice balance, but we'll see, we're still early on, but I'm enjoying Oathsworn. And now when this comes out, this episode comes out, we'll have already gone through another Saturday, but this upcoming Saturday, we are not playing because I'm going over to Dan and Alexa's, and we're instead going to watch the Green Bay Packers versus the San Francisco 49ers fan game, because Dan is from California and he's a big 49ers fan,
okay,
and I am obviously a big Packers fan. So by the time this comes out, you'll already know that the Niners have probably beat the Packers, because that's what's supposed to happen. They're a much better team this year, but we're going to go, we're just going to have fun, we're going to hang out together. And he's like, oh, you sure you want to watch it? Whatever. I'm like, no. Look at it this way. One of us is going to be happy. That's great. If we were both fans of the same team and that team was losing, we would just be miserable. This way, we get to be happy.
Okay. I didn't think about it that way, but that does make sense.
Yeah.
So no one's going to be ritually sacrificed if someone loses or...
Right.
I don't know how sports work. Is that how sports work?
Yes. That's how sports work.
Okay.
That's how sports work. Oh, I had some other things, but you have anything other to talk about?
I mean, I could talk about a lot of stuff, but it's best that I don't.
I wanted to talk to you about this volleyball game. You're talking about you're making a volleyball game?
Yeah, bro. It's all, dude. It's done. It's not okay. It's not done. But I have a full rule set to play like a complete game to whatever. Miniature. 25, 15, 15, whatever. Yeah, I don't know how many points.
A miniatures volleyball game.
Yeah, dude.
Okay, when I was a kid, one of my favorite original Nintendo games is called Super Spike V-Ball.
Okay, I've played this game. There's a arcade in Roseville right next to the AMC at the mall. It's called like Superstar Arcade or something like that. But they had a volleyball game, and I'm pretty sure it was called that. So I've played it at least one time.
Yeah, it was by a company. I can't remember the name of the Japanese company that made this game, but they also made a number of other sports games. They made like World Cup Soccer. They made Super Dodgeball.
Yeah.
Same company. And what they did with all of those games was there was a level of like refs didn't exist. And in a way that like you could do stuff that wouldn't be legal. There wasn't like full out fighting in the games, but like you could go up and like just if in the like in the soccer game, a guy is doing this long pass across the field, I will run up and I will just fucking tackle the guy that the ball is going to so he's not there to get it. And there's no yellow cards for this. And I'm pretty sure, if my memory serves, in the volleyball game, when you're both up to the net, you can like smack the guy across the net. And I'm just like, man, how great would that be to be some level of like, it's not full blood bowl, like just murdering each other, or guild ball murdering each other. But there's a level of it's not just the volleyball. There's also there's a level of beating the shit out of each other.
Right? Yeah, right. Absolutely.
But only the guys in the front row are able to combat each other.
Right.
You gotta have like a sand toss the sand in the eyes.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Sand in the eyes.
So are you recommending things for my game right now?
Yeah.
Is that
what
you're doing? Okay.
We're workshopping it.
Hey, that's cool, man. I love that. I think there needs to be some level of that, because one thing about volleyball, it's different than other sports for the most part, is that in volleyball, when you have the ball and you're trying to the net, the other person isn't really doing anything.
Yeah, there's no interaction.
So There is some planning on what you're supposed to do when the ball does come to your side, and like you're reacting to what your opponent's doing, but you get to do much less. And so in the world of games, that isn't very fun, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about that. I was like, how do I have the other player interact? And some kind of thing like that, like you could cast like hexes on the people trying to like hit the ball or set the ball or receive the ball.
Oh, I didn't even think about magic. Yeah,
because it's like fantasy. Where does the fantasy come in, you know? Right, so right. I was trying to figure that out. So I thought about that. That's a fun idea. I don't know how to like work out like, when a person goes to spike the ball, obviously there are people that block it. Like, what is that? Is that like an armor check? Like, how does getting the ball through the block and getting a point work in this? Is it like a roll to hit, roll to ruin, roll armor save kind of thing? Is it something entirely different than that? That's some interaction too. So I don't know.
I must think a system like guild ball, where you had like
you get successes and you like pick results kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that they're almost being a this pool of points, right? And you can use points to do like a dive save, right? So the point can go on a little bit. It's like, oh, I'm gonna make him use his dive save, which is gonna cost him 5. So now he's only got 4 left. But then he can do some other things to like build back his resource pool. And so it's this ebb and flow of your resource pool to who can win the point.
I love that. That's definitely a thing in the game. It's called heat.
I love it.
I know.
What a great term.
It's called heat because people in volleyball, when you watch it, at least when I watch it, it's so clear that people go like on a fucking roll.
Yeah.
Like when a team is doing emotionally well, everyone plays so much better. And like people in volleyball know that. At the end of every single point, even if you lost, every person in the team comes together in the middle of court and they celebrate. And so like they're all trying to maintain a positive mental attitude, like to the point of like celebrating when they lose. And so heat management is a thing in the game. And I have some ideas where like you could, there's like a, you know, like in guild ball, you can like spend it on generic things, momentum, but you can also spend it on things that are like for that player as an individual. Like they have like their own special things.
Yes.
And so I was gonna copy that system, but with heat and like momentum and stuff like that. Motivation, whatever you want to call it.
That's great. I'm already picturing the boxer. That's great.
I know. It's like, what are the two? I think it'd be hilarious to have a fantasy dwarf volleyball team because they're all so fucking short or something.
Yeah, they're, I mean, Like, it's, I just picture it from like a video game when you're scrolling through the teams and they have the bars of how good they are at different aspects.
Yeah, and height and the, is just like.
Yeah, their spike thing is just like all the way down.
It's like, they'll never let a ball touch the ground. Yeah. But like, they're never going to spike, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They got to do a lot. They got to do like the curve shot where they.
Yeah. They put curve on the ball,
put a little English on it, spins back around. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Now, it just fun. Makes me feel like a ping pong game.
That's what it is. That's what next. It is, basically. Yeah.
I mean, the table tennis, the miniatures games is the next thing.
Yeah. I mean, what does that look like? I have no idea.
That's the dueling version.
That's the dueling version of volleyball. Perfect. Fucking.
Oh, man. Hey, you know what? Instead of actually just playing an awesome game of ping pong, let's sit down on an equal sized table.
We're playing miniature war game on the same size as a ping pong table. Yeah. I put my miniature down on my half. Oh my god!
And there's
the fucking nerdiest thing I've ever done in my life.
And there's a miniature ping pong ball, but the ping pong ball is the size of a real ping pong ball, but it's just 3D printed resin instead of using a regular ping pong.
It's the size of the model. It's just like, oh my god, dude.
Let's look at all these great ideas we're coming up with.
Are you ripping it right now, brother?
Yeah, dude, I got
smells,
some.
Smells not okay in here, dude.
I got some farts.
Dude, okay, so I ate a bunch of things that were not healthy for me this past weekend, and, well, all three of us were doing it, and that is a recipe for nothing good.
No, yeah. Like, as soon as you, like, get up to, like, go to the fridge or something, you just, like, release everything that's been squished into the couch, and you're like, jeez.
Anyways, all right. Where we're at? Where are we? You got more preamble, ramble, more preamble?
Oh, always, but never.
okay.
I can fold it into what we painted because I did want to talk about that. I have been doing quite a bit of painting.
Yes,
since our last episode.
You're crushing me. So what? You get started. You got a lot more.
So a couple things. I brought some stuff I painted for the latest video of the old world.
Oh, yes, the old world.
The old world.
Quite a divisive release.
Yeah, I mean, ooh. I thought it was important to paint both one of the new models that's in there, the only really cool model that's in there I painted, and then
Savage.
And then the other 90 models, which are the old ones, in to just show how different these things look. They don't look like they're in the same game. There is some like simplicity and nostalgia in the old ones. And I did enjoy just kind of finding a updated way to just tweaks to my speed paint system where it's like, if I had to paint 90 of these, what would be a way that I could do that I would be moderately happy with? That would take me maybe 5 minutes a model. That's probably not even. And it doesn't use an airbrush other than the Zenithal Prime. So
Okay.
Because if you're old enough to like Old World, you're old enough to be crotchety about airbrushes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you like Old World, you don't even remember what washes are.
No.
Back then, you would use Future Floor Polish, which is a floor cleaner, mixed with wood stain, and that was your wash.
I bought some of that Pledge.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, I remember you bought that. Yeah.
It actually works.
Yeah, and it's got a surfactant in it. It definitely works. Man, one thing I don't miss about skeletons in the old world is that fucking massive forehead dip.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. Like, that's never going to look good when you try to paint it the right way. You have to paint it differently or else it's going to look like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Giant dark void in the center of your forehead.
And it's so rough, too, because these guys are, for being very, very basic, they're fiddly to put together, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have the arm sockets separate. And, you know, to get the head on is just in this tiny little thing. And you kind of have to hold it there, too. It's like, even with just a little bit of plastic cement.
Man, dude, the guard, the sword, and the hand are so comically large.
Yeah.
Ah, it's been a while, man. It's been a fucking while. Look at this fucking model.
I think I describe them as looking as if they're wearing baseball gloves.
Yeah, 100%. They got fucking mitts on right now.
Pumpkin heads. But then there's the new Tomb King, which mm-hmm. it was kind of, I did an adaptation of the same kind of underpainting, but with kind of wet blending speed paints or contrast paints, and then just doing a quick highlights on those to the important areas. And that didn't take me very long either, but I'm really liking in terms of like evolving and testing out new ways of speed painting that look good on the table. Like, I was like, oh, I'm pretty happy with that.
You know, what's amazing is this like feels like it could have been a clown fiesta.
Yeah.
But it really isn't.
Right.
It's like, In my head, I have like rules for how I paint, and you're breaking my rules right now, but it doesn't look bad. So like, for instance, you have a very strong purple shadow,
mm-hmm.
and it's only on the feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I mean, as far as I can tell, that specific hue of purple, kind of like almost an indigo-y, bluey one,
mm-hmm.
it's on the back, but like looking at the front of the model, it's nowhere else, but I'm not wanting it to be anywhere else, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're breaking my rules right now, and now I don't know what to think about miniature painting anymore.
The only thing that I felt like a clown fiesta is because I went for the traditional teal and red stuff for the Tomb Kings, because I'm like, I want it to feel like a Tomb King. And,
it's working for me for some reason. Yeah. I don't know why.
Because I just put it on the bright areas that are pushing it to his face. It smells like butts in here.
Yeah, it smells like butts every fucking 10 minutes, dude.
It's all right. I kind of like repositioned a little bit and some escaped the crevasse. I had fun with him. And I mean, it's so funny. Like, look at the size of the skull of that guy versus the size of the skull on the other model. Like,
also, the bases are so big.
They
used to be the smaller, I forget if it's 25 mil squares. This is 28 mil squares.
Are they?
I can't remember what it was, but they increased. It was the dumbest thing in the world. It's like they brought Oval back. I haven't rebased my fucking models. It's
perfect.
Like, guess what, bitch?
You're going to
have to. You
still
kind of have to. You could put the, if they're still in squares, obviously you can put the smaller squares into like a little like ring that would increase the size of the base. But like,
that's still more work. Then you got to develop a base.
It's still more basing work, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
They look cool, though.
We want you to love the game that was popular 20 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever, but we also want you to spend more money on it, not just play with what you already have, okay?
Yeah. Please. I also kind of get it because it's like, if we want to have more elaborate models, you need to space the units out a little bit more so
yes.
they can like have cooler poses, so it's a necessary evil. I watched the battle report for 9th edition, that's not what it's called, Old World. Did you happen to watch that or no?
No, I didn't.
It was a decent length. It wasn't super long. It was like 40 minutes. They fly through like the rules and stuff, but you're not really watching it for the rules. It was good. I really enjoyed watching it. And it kind of made me realize, I kind of hated Bretonnia back in the day. But like Bretonnia is kind of like, it's French-ish, but also it's like Arthurian knights.
Hmm.
Questing knights, knights of the realm. Like, all that stuff is in that faction. And I was like, do I like Bretonnia?
No.
And then I was like, I do. I mean, that new Pegasus Lord is fucking awesome. Like, the Lady in the Lake kind of Jaina of Proudmoore from Warcraft 3 character looks
right.
Awesome. And the new Knights on Foot look fucking awesome, which aren't in the new Star set, right?
They kept the new stuff to a bare minimum in each of those big boxes.
Okay. So those new things look really cool. I'm definitely into that. I'm definitely gonna do Wood Elves if they like ever get any love in Old World, but like there's no reason why I couldn't love on some Bretonnian knights. But also it's so weird how, at least for me, a very small change in perspective just like totally changes if I might like something or not like something.
Hmm.
You know, it's like I've disliked these things forever. But the moment I relate them to Arthurian lore, it's like, actually, I like them now. And so this is bizarre.
Yeah, that's the level of the miniature painting and gaming side that is what keeps us so interested is like my unique take, my fun idea, my perspective on what these things could be once I turn them from gray plastic to mine. And whether or not that it ever comes to full fruition for each of us, for each individual project, or whether or not they end up turning out as good as we had envisioned them in our heads, are beside the point. It's the excitement of pushing you to start a project.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of pushing you over that edge.
Yep. I also painted, go ahead. I painted more on my Golden Demon piece. I got the Ooh. Assassin dude. So all these, once they're, I consider them done, it's in quotes, I would say they're like 90% done. There's some more filter work, probably some glaze work, maybe some reworking of areas. Once I get the full scene all painted and put together, I'll know what to tweak, but just kind of getting them where I want them to be. One thing and I started on the High Marshal on horse as well, and to the point now where I can start working on his NMM. And one thing you'll notice when looking at those two specifically is the big jump in saturation and brightness, and it's purposeful. As you move towards the center and towards the top of the scene, it's going to become brighter and more saturated because it's trying to draw the eye up to him. And so trying to create that screaming red cloak I don't know if I'm 100% there yet, but I feel fairly good about it. So that red compared to like the red on the inside of the assassin's, like his inner cloak thing, to show that, you know, we're building the attention towards something else.
Definitely see that. What red are you using?
So it's a workup of Games Workshop red. So it's the Corn red, Optima Fistin red, and then the red by Chimera to get that brightest bright. So I wanted to see how far I could push it. Just use, and then it's the universal shadow color called Darkness, which is like a deep purple, is glazed in for shadows on those.
What's your eye policy on these guys?
It's tough. Dude, it's really tough.
The policy is it's tough.
Yeah, like that. I really am not happy with that High Marshal because, like, I didn't realize it until I spent a bunch of time painting him. It's like he doesn't really fucking have eyes in there. And so trying to create enough of one and then trying to get that glint right, it's still not there.
That's the hard. I see people who paint Space Marine heads. And I think they have to have, like, the perfect head to really nail it. But when they get, like, a big iris or a pupil, I can't remember which one is which. But then they also get the little glint. It's like, dude, how do you fucking do both that pupil and also the reflection on a 32mm model's head?
Yeah.
Like, I really struggle with that. Because it just merges with the eye white. And it looks like you have a tiny pupil on the eyes now.
Yeah, it's very hard. Because most times they even sculpt a ton of tiny detail for the eyes, but it's in like the upper lid, the lower lid, the bags under that. There's all that detail, and then what that means is there's almost no eye there, because it ends up being because it's pushed it so close together to show you the detail around there. Mm-hmm. So it's like the first thing is you got to nail the detail around that eye first, and that gets you quite a ways there. I kind of wish I would have done David Coldwell. Well, started with the eye, really got in the eye exactly where I wanted it before I moved, because I didn't. So I'm like, I got to the point where it's like I repainted that High Marshal's eyes like six times, and I get to where like they're okay. So I'm gonna. I just need to keep moving.
Yeah, I freaking love how this dagger is, or the sword is popping out of this guy's coat, and it's just like. It's like just so bright, like it just really works. You know, he's wearing a bunch of warm, brown, muddy, worn clothing, and he's got this fucking assassin blade, and it's so bright and just like, I don't know, angry, aggressive. I love it.
Yeah, I wanted that. I was like, I had to try to rein myself in on everything because I really wanted that to happen. I wanted that moment because it does two things. One, it really tells the story of who he is. You know, because like this is the thing that's coming out from the darkness of that cloak, and you're like, oh, this dude is cut your throat in the alleyway kind of fighter. But it also tells you that the restraint on the rest of the piece was purposeful.
Mm-hmm, yeah, frames it for you. Yeah. It gives you context.
Yeah, so
it works.
So we're gonna get pretty bright on the NMM on the High Marshal. He's like to a point where it's like you can't really tell how great everything is. Good or bad thing is painted right now until you kind of get all that to pull it together, and that will tell me how much everything else needs more work. Man. I'm happy with his gloves. I want a real dark leather gloves on the High Marshal that kind of cracked and they feel real dark, but there is that cracking in the glazing of that kind of reddish brown over top of it. I was happy how those turned out. But
it looks a little bit similar to this guy's like neck covering.
Yes.
Which is good. You have some elements that are tying them together, some elements that are separating them.
Yeah. And that universal warm shadow color throughout all the models, they kind of feel that they're somewhat together because of that. So I'm hoping that using that all the way through the project will pay dividends long term.
Dude, how do you, so when you're painting this guy's face, are you just like fucking all up touching this model?
I don't remember. No, I don't touch him. I can put like the side of my palm right against the wood, and then I can kind of like lean over and creep into it with my hand.
Okay. But you ever do the Rainbow Bridge? That's me, the name of it right now.
Yeah.
You ever do the thing where you're like, you got palm on one side, palm on the other, and for stability, you're like, you're touching tips right here. Do you ever do this?
I haven't, but that's a good idea. It's like the holy triangle or something. Just keep your Yeah.
I mean, I look at this model, especially the assassin model, and I'm just like, wow, man, you're such a good painter. Like, it's so incredible. Do you, I mean, I don't know. You're probably, because you're amongst it, you know, you're in it, you're deep in the process. You're like, okay, step one of 35 done. On to the next thing. But if you look at this guy in a vacuum, it's just a really nice paint job, you know? It's just a really, really nice paint job. And, like, you don't want to be sappy, but this is victory in and of itself. Like, this super nicely painted model.
Thank you.
So good.
You're welcome. I'm really liking him. And I went with different skin tones. I wanted a variety of skin tones throughout the piece.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so
I really like how it's all warm, too. You have all this warm. It's just really nice. It's like it's very purposeful. And that's all I care about. Well, that's not all I care about. That's like the cherry on top is that I can tell everything was so orchestrated and so planned.
Yeah. So there's five total models in the unit. I keep reminding myself this. But dude, quickly sidetrack what you're saying. I have no idea. I have no idea how good or bad these are painted because I stare at them and I paint them and I'm like, so you get these little moments of like, okay, I feel really good about that. Or that now that this piece is done and this piece is done, I feel better about piece one because piece section two is now painted. Because they kind of, they're outside of the vacuum. They start to have to live in the same environment and they can kind of either aid each other or fight each other. And so as you do more things, I go through this constant ebb and flow of I really like this or like I really feel like it's not good enough and I don't really know. It's different than when I was like painting for competition and it's a single model.
Okay.
Because you don't have all the variables that need to all come together at the end to really determine how good it does the piece work or not. So that's also one of the most fun parts. Like when I did that with the Soul Blight one, it was so many hours of everything just on its own painting handle. And there is a level, even though I know there was failures in composition of that piece. And I learned a lot and I would have done it completely differently if I had done it over. But that moment of gluing everything down, everything is painted and you're just like building this Lego set of all the work you've done. And you just see it for the first time of everything completed when before it was just a bunch of separate pieces. It's the most satisfying thing. Now, I've never won a Golden Demon, so that might be more satisfying. But it's a moment of like that I have never gotten in anything else in mini painting. It's like pulling together all your work and you finally see it as its whole thing. It's like if you think about like if you painted a massive painting, well, it's kind of all together as it's coming together. In this, it's not. You know, you really have to like believe that they're all going to work the way you want them to. And so that's it. But there's five total models.
Okay.
Excuse me.
And this is number three?
Four, yes. This is three. Unfortunately, when I'm counting five, I'm counting him and his horse as one of them.
Yeah. I just thought about that.
But the good thing is one of those five is also just the dog.
Okay.
So
okay. Win some, you lose some.
So next week,
really five.
I'm painting the dog for a video. So I'm spending an entire week. And I'm hoping I can get it done in a week. I should be able to, because I did that wolf last year and I was really happy with how the dire wolf turned out for the diorama. That was probably my favorite paint job of all the models that I had painted on that piece.
Really?
Yeah. He was really good. He was just positioned really poorly in the scene where you couldn't see. I'm like, that one's the best painted. Why is it hiding behind the fucking hill and the main lady? Damn it. So I'm excited to do that and do a video on painting animals, painting fur, and highlighting how the best models Games Workshop makes are all their animals. So
okay.
So if I get knock out this guy, knock out that, then going into February, I will just have the horse in the big bulky Iron Knight, and those are the only two models left to paint, and then obviously the base. But the base isn't massive anymore. It's a nice compact. Interesting base. I'm excited to paint that too. So the end is not in sight, but I can see where I'll need to stand to see the end.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Like if I get there, then I can see the mountain.
Yeah. I gave myself timelines, like my goals for myself by month, how far I needed to be.
Oh, man, this is the skill that I need to learn. The skill of being a fucking adult. Yeah.
So what did you paint?
I painted a heavy crossbow guy for my Cawdor Necromunda warband. I've had this model assembled for the longest time. When I first got Necromunda Minis, I put together my Word Bearer, which I painted a bazillion years ago. And I put together that guy because he was the coolest second guy that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got around to painting him on stream, and I finished him last stream. And he looks like the other guy. You know, he lives in that same world. I painted him with, other than the green and the cream, I painted him with the Fanatic paints start to finish. And that was like a fun experiment. I'm going to talk more about that when we get into the preamble ramble, what I learned with that paint set.
You mean the something we learned in the after party?
Yes, that part. What did I say?
You said preamble ramble.
My bad.
We're already past that.
We are past that. Mm-hmm. I struggled with the other guy has a lot of other easy areas to put in my hot pink spot color.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of struggled with where to put the hot pink on this guy. And then I realized that the Necromunda bases have like little pods on them that could be like LEDs.
Yeah.
And so I went back to the other guy that I'd already painted. And I painted those little lights on their bases hot pink as well, just to give this guy a little bit more hot pink on the model. I could paint like the tip of his like dummy rocket with a hot pink as well. I don't know if that'll look good. But I was just trying to figure out other areas to put it on the mini so I didn't feel like it was so distracting.
Yeah. Yeah. If you did it on that little nubbin tip,
yeah,
that then you could have just edge, faint edge highlights of the rings behind it, having it so it's like feeling that little bit of glow is touching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Like right on the ridges behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah. The ridges behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Because it's pushing out light in all directions, mm-hmm. and push it back to those. And then that would sell the fact that it's a light source, not just a glowy thing.
Just like, yeah, like a pink thing, yeah.
Yeah, like you have it on the edges of the candles.
Yeah, a little bit.
Of the white, and that really tells my eye that that's a glowy pink flame.
Yeah.
This is a really cool pose. The thing that makes this pose to me is just the fact that his right arm is like notching that giant explosive arrow thing, and just the pose of like it's in and he's putting it down, like something about that, it just really works. It doesn't feel static. It feels like it's in the midst of action.
Yes, yeah, action pose for sure.
Yeah,
the guy who sculpted the big Tau and the big orc that he won a demon for in England, you know this guy I'm talking about,
Tom Hughes?
Yes. He sculpted that model, and he still works for GW. I didn't know he worked for GW.
I thought he did because he's only doing stuff in open. Demon.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, so he messaged me, and he's like, what do you think of the model? That was one of my first minis that I sculpted for GW. Maybe he meant that one specifically, or meant the Cawdor ones in general. I can't remember what he said, but I didn't know that, so it was cool to kind of figure that out.
It's really good, yeah. I really like the metals. I really like the amount of rust.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, man, let me tell you, man. I got a little trick for you. It's called this new hot product called Dirty Town.
Yeah.
That fucking shit is just for free. When it works, and lately it's been working for me pretty much nonstop. I don't got to heat the model up and heat the liquid up. I just give it a good shake, and then it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that it's got work time too with water. Mm-hmm. Like, so if you need to spread it out or you need it, it actually funny with water too. So if you wanted more of a brighter, crustier, you dab a little just water while it's still wet in there in that corner.
Yeah, and it makes it brighter sometimes.
Yeah. Like, I would assume it would do the opposite. It acts the opposite of how acrylic paint that we're used to using X.
Yeah.
Usually you add more water, you're thinning down the paint on the model surface, which then dilutes it, which then fades it.
Mm-hmm.
This, it's like, no.
It's like bright pale orange in some cases. It's bizarre.
It's like a Mogwai. You just let it touch the water. Bad things happen. But yeah, this guy's really cool. It's actually almost, it's like a half step towards Grimdark painting.
Yeah. I've had a video idea about Grimdark painting for a long time. And I have no idea how I would paint a model to, like, because I'm pretty sure I understand what Grimdark is for the most part, but maybe I would learn something beyond what I think it is. But I feel like if I had to paint a model in Grimdark style, I don't know what I would do. I don't know how, because, like, what I imagine is that it's very messy, and it's very, like, kind of just let the products do what they want to do kind of thing. And I love to control stuff and have things buttoned down and very neat and orderly. So I don't know how I would paint in that style.
That's sort of how a lot of people paint it, and that's how a lot of Grimdark painting looks like shit.
Okay.
If you just are like, we're just going to slap nasty-looking stuff down all across everything, and it'll just look grimy and nasty or whatever, it just looks like a muddy mess.
Okay.
The to me, what really makes it work is the control you're talking about in really having high drama areas. And oftentimes this comes in color choice, in how bright you go on things. Because you want to have really stark, bright things, because that, and then it's like pulling into the grunge from that.
Okay.
So you'll often see where, like, if they're painting like a big monster. So orcs is a great example. A lot of the best looking grimdark orcs are really, really pale skin, because you get to have that drama from the base coat color decision.
Okay.
But yes, there, you can still get super grungy, and it's about control of that. And that's just my opinion, but that's what I think.
Yeah.
Like when I think of like Grimdark Compendium, Zach Cascagoon, what he does so well is, and if you watch his videos, he's great at teaching that on YouTube, is it's about the decisions you make from the get go and knowing where to really show restraint.
Okay.
If you just throw gunk on gunk, it'll look like shit.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah, I think if you did a little looking into that and kind of came up with your own game plan prior, I think your painting style would really work well with it.
I think based on how you're describing, I think yours would, because you are really good at having key areas of interest. One thing that I'm not great at is restraint, is like knowing, at least with like value and brightness, knowing where to accent stuff and knowing where not to accent stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of accent stuff to like a similar level across the entire miniature, or I just don't paint it at all.
Faster that way.
So I need to just figure out some a way to do restraint in a way where it's like, I want you to look at this part of the model and it's clear that I'm doing that, and it's not like everything is kind of like bright and like clean and shit. But also, I feel like, and people have definitely done this before with Grimdark, obviously a portion of it is based on the artwork of the guy whose name escapes me at the moment, who did a lot of the original art for 40K.
John Blanche.
Thank you. And he has very specific color palette that he uses. And a huge color that he uses a lot is sepia. It's like a yellowy brown color.
Yeah, he uses the Zorn color palette.
Exactly, yeah. And you don't really see sepia a whole lot, at least I don't, when I look at people who paint in a Grimdark style. It's mostly just desaturation and darkness, but no sepia. It's maybe kind of like re-exploring his actual color palette, pops of red, large amounts of sepia. Maybe the base could be like a desert sand base. That's kind of like the backdrop of a painting.
Ochre. Yeah.
Ochre, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, because the Zorn color palette is, hundreds of years old or more, and stuff. And there's some great examples in traditional art, very famous paintings that are used in that. And they're really pleasant because they're very warm and they're, but his combination of his art style of it feeling almost macabre.
Yeah, the actual illustration itself is like scratchy and like very, I don't even know how to describe it, but yeah. That's another thing. It's like, because like there's two components of that art. The palette and then the illustration style. And so it's like, how do you transfer that to miniature painting? It's like in an interesting way. I don't know, but that'd be a fun video to do, and I should do it at some point.
I think you should. That would be fun.
Yeah.
I'd watch it. Hey, I'm Michael Klump.
The internet is a wild place, and we've all found ourselves in one sketchy corner of the internet or the other, looking for definitely not IP-infringing generic spaceman, but luckily, today's sponsor, NordVPN, has our backs.
Nord is offering the Good Peepees 4 months for free when you sign up for a 2-year package of NordVPN in the description below at nordvpn.com/tup. And this also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee.
We all know that VPNs are complicated, so I'm not going to try to explain what it does or how it works, which is probably for the best because for all I know, it just might harness the powers of Zinch to work, which will keep the hackers out.
Nord is one of the most popular VPNs out there, which means it's simple. It's easy to install and use. After just a couple clicks, you can keep malware and those pesky pop-up ads at bay and block.
A VPN, or virtual private network, is just a software that keeps all of your information safe and secure from those nasty agencies like the government, as well as advertising agencies and anybody else.
I know that Nord would be super helpful trying to watch some international volleyball tournaments, which can be hard to get at sometimes, and also super helpful for some out-of-market shopping.
That out-of-market shopping thing is something that I'd never thought of before Nord came and told told us about it. You can even get great deals on things like hotels and plane tickets because those change just on what region you're buying from.
Which can be super handy for trying to find plane tickets for some of those larger conventions like Adepticon.
That's right. With Adepticon and other conventions right around the corner, NordVPN could be the right tool for you to help you find those discounts. And as an added bonus, it'll keep you safe on that hotel and airport Wi-Fi.
Or if you want to just check out Modern Family on UK Netflix.
Luckily for tech illiterate people, totally not talking about myself here, NordVPN has made this super simple to use and easy to set up.
And if for whatever reason it's not for you, 30-day money-back guarantee.
So click on the link down in the video description or show notes to get your 4 months free with a 2-year plan at nordvpn.com/tup.
All right, we're talking about our hobby New Year resolutions. I bet people have been talking about that in your Discord. They have been in my Discord. Plans people have for the new year. You know, you got to be careful about New Year's resolutions,
mm-hmm.
for the hobby especially, because you don't want a plan that's going to like suck up, like, I don't know, anything more than half the amount of time you have in a given year, right?
Right.
Because as we all know, new plastic crack comes out. We want to paint that plastic crack. You got to have time for the new stuff or else you're never going to do what you set out to do and you're going to feel sad about it, you know?
Yeah, I think in that regard, like, the more specific you go with a resolution, the more likely you're setting yourself up to stumble.
Oh,
you know? Okay, so if you're like, I want to paint, I want to put paint on brush 3 days a week. That's a great one because it's generic. What I paint or how many hours I'm painting over those 3 days could vary, and I can be flexible with that. But if it's like, I'm going to paint 20 hours a week on my Space Marines army until I have 4,000 points painted, and you get real specific, and then you stumble a little bit, you kind of just feel like the train's going off the tracks, and it's easier to just drop the whole thing.
Do you feel like there is more of a sense of accomplishment when it's a specific goal that you finish, or does that not impact you?
Yeah, I feel like if it's a very specific thing, you have this nice bow that you're wrapping up on the end because you're like, ah. It's done now. I accomplished it. You have this moment of accomplishment, which is different than like, I'm going to put paint on brush 3 days a week. There's not really an end to that. And maybe, but what that does is a different kind of satisfaction because you're building momentum and all good things will come because you stuck to that. But I agree. If it's like, I want this project done, and then you look at it at the table and everything's painted and you're all looking at it in one full army or whatever it is, like, you get that moment.
Yeah, feels good.
Feels good.
Feels good. So in 2023, I technically finished two whole fantasy armies, and they're both about 50 model count armies, so very similar in size.
It's a lot of models, dude.
It's a lot of models, yeah. And obviously the AOS one is a little bit more complicated because the models are bigger and more elaborate.
Yep.
And also another thing I want to be honest about is that I painted, you know, some portion of those models in prior years, and they just happened to be within striking distance in 2023.
But you still gotta take the shot.
I know, right?
You gotta do the work.
I know, yeah, that's true. The Song of Ice and Fire one especially was pretty far off of actually being completed. So if I can finish two armies in a year, I feel like one of my resolutions is to finish one army this year. And I think the one that I want to finish, there's a lot. Like, I would love to have like a Legion, Star Wars Legion army, but I've never played that game before. But one that I know for a fact that I want to finish in this year is my 40K Dark Eldar army. Fantasy's got the spotlight. Now it's time for some sci-fi to slip in. And I'm definitely going to want to finish up that 40K army because I have a couple ideas that I'm really excited for, and I want to see it all come together in this kind of like westerny, dusty, Dark Eldar military vibe color scheme army. And I can't wait to do it.
Woo-woo!
That's kind of my first idea. What do you think about that? Is that trash?
Trash or treasure? Let's say I think it's a good idea if you are excited to play that game or you're very excited to do that as a video or as a number of videos. Like, there is value in just painting and having a project that you're really excited about doing separate from games. And if I were to flip this on a It's All About John moment, it's been a long time since I've like played games of substance that are miniature war games.
Right. Played games of substance that are miniature war games. What do you mean by that? Is that
played consistent games
with
an army or even with a squad or like, it's like, I haven't gotten into
it. Are you missing it though? Is that a thing you need?
No, I'm not.
You got Magic the Gathering.
I got.
That's your crunch.
I mean, I play two games, two active games consistently that use miniatures. We play our games every Saturday night that are miniature board games. And then I got D&D where we paint our miniatures for D&D. So I don't feel like I'm so separated in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. You get your game in other ways.
Yeah. And honestly, if I'm going to be real, open up a vein here.
Open it up. Well, I'm kind of scared right now.
For myself, and I think there's a good number of goody peepees that are with me on this, it's very hard to find consistent time to get together and play games. Yeah. And that's been the biggest thing for me. It's, one, you got to have a community. The game's got to be happening, so you have opportunity. And two, just real busy. I'm just, you know, whether it's, you know, I'm to the point where it's like I have my hobbies. I don't really even play Magic very often. It's more of a like hobby on my own of deck building and collecting and putting my cards in binders and stuff like that. But like, I have to say, I'm going to be taking away time that I'm spending with my family, with my daughter, all the projects around the house, with my pets and stuff, if I'm adding more on there. And that sometimes it works and it fits into the schedule and it doesn't disrupt things, but oftentimes it doesn't. And so if you want to make a resolution or want to play more games, the thing that I'm approaching with 2024 is to just – take it easy on yourself, find a balance, but don't push it too hard where you're dropping all those balls you're juggling in other parts of your life to make that work.
Yeah, that's always the tough part, is knowing, because I'm of two minds here. You obviously, a lot of people will say, like, hey, if you want to hang out, you want to do something, the common answer you'll get is, well, I'm busy. And I feel like a lot of people are busy, and I feel like we're very busy and stuff like that. And but I also hear people say, like, you know, if you really want to do something, you're going to make time for it. Like,
yep.
And that's kind of like a convicting thing to hear, right?
Right.
And so it makes you really think. It's like, oh, do I want to play 40K? Do I really want to paint a Dark Elder army? Do I really want to do these things that I'm telling myself I want to do in my head? And so it makes you really think about it. But like, you've heard it before. I've always wanted to have a painted army of every game, or not every game. That's ridiculous. But like most of the popular games, like the top 10 popular games. How about that? And like there are some elements of this army that I am just so excited to see come to life. And it's maybe a more apt resolution is like, I don't necessarily care if it's a completed army, but if it's a thing that looks like a completed army, then that's kind of good enough for me.
Yeah.
Like I like the AOS thing that I have because like, it isn't a competitive army, I would say, but like at the very least, it is a foundation that I can like can add to for the rest of my hobby life. You know, like I don't care if AOS ceases to exist; they're probably always going to make some kind of vampire-ish thing that will fit into that world, and I can kind of just keep adding to it, and it'll keep existing in my cabinet and looking cool.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to get somewhere there with Dark Eldar, a couple of centerpiece items. Razorwing Jetfighter is on my number one list. I can't wait to paint that thing. I think the first real video in 2024 might be me painting up a Razorwing Jetfighter in like a really cool way and like doing custom decals and doing like a really insane custom base and all that stuff. Yeah, there are definitely some things that I'm excited for. And so I'm definitely going to do those things. But maybe whether or not it's an army, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach to it is if there's – the hobbying side excites you, and the game is there's a level of excitement that's attached there too, because that is one of the reasons that drives you to want to do it. That doesn't mean you have to commit to yourself to X games a month starting in April for the rest of the calendar year in order for me to even begin.
Yeah.
Don't put all that weight on yourself in the front end. Just like go with what's exciting for you. If you have an idea, if you want to start working towards it, then just do that. Let it organically evolve into what it is. If that ends up being you end up playing a ton, awesome. If it ends up being you play a couple of times over the course of the year with this project that you worked on, that's also a victory. That is not a failure. You know, that is just what life offered for you. And like you said, it's really important that to know that you can prioritize things differently in your life and be like, well, I'm prioritizing playing more 40K because I'm really enjoying it now that I have this painted army. And that's great. But that means that you have to sit down and take the time and be like, okay, I'm prioritizing that. That means maybe I maybe I can't do this that I usually do. Maybe I can't go to my regular D&D game every single week because there's just not enough time, or it's not fair to put all the responsibilities of the house on my significant other. If I'm always gone playing games with other people, the relationship may not work out really well long term for that.
He's got too. Some relationship advice from,
yeah,
from good old Ninja.
I've been there, so that is why I warned thee of that path. Of that path.
Have someone told me, have you taken a sponsorship for, not, is it OkCupid? It was something like a
Adam and Eve?
Yeah, yeah.
I took one of Adam and Eve.
Did you?
That's just like, yeah, dildos and shit.
I don't think that's what Adam and Eve is. Is that what Adam and Eve is?
Yeah, it is.
What the fuck? What? Did you do that in like your relationship advice video?
No,
top tits? No,
no, no, no. Oh, that was funny because they were like wanted to be like very like PG, very like, so it was like,
why,
it was,
bro?
It was really fun to write the script with just like innuendo jokes the whole ad.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, anyways,
I didn't get to say big floppy dong. I really wanted to say big floppy dong.
That's what you regret the most.
That's what I regret. 2023, my biggest regret.
You want to get another Adam and Eve sponsorship? You can say that, big floppy dongs.
Yeah, big floppy dongs.
All right,
for all your big floppy dong needs.
Lubes,
we got lots of lubes.
I don't know if I want to play 40K.
Speaking of big floppy dongs,
I don't want to play 40K. I mean, like when I criticized AOS, like half of the comments were like, "Well, guy." Look, I can't wait for you to play 40K because it's like 10 times worse. Like, that's what everyone was saying. So maybe I'm probably not going to enjoy it that much. But that's, I mean, I don't know if it really matters if the game is super amazing, but it's still interesting to play. But speaking of playing 40K, did you see that Games Night, because people in England love to pluralize things that make no sense.
Yeah.
They had a sponsored video that was sponsored by GW.
Really?
Yeah.
Boo.
So the first, I mean, it's, as far as I'm aware, the first channel to take a sponsored GW ever on the platform was one that wasn't necessarily like, I don't know, a miniature painting one that's been in it for a while. So Games Night is a Yogcast channel. They're huge. That's like a company, Yogcast. Mm. So that's probably why. Also, they're in England, super nearby, probably another reason. But also, the video was a fucking banger. Their videos are all bangers. So, I mean, obviously good shit. They make good shit. But it was so cool. It's so cool and so interesting to see. That's like, wow, this is the first one. They're starting to do it. I don't know if you saw that. But yeah, it's a zero to hero kind of video where the guys at Yogcast take two people who know nothing about 40K but have like a lot of energy and are just fun people. And they go from zero, nothing. One picks Space Marines. The other picks Tyranids. Which is shockingly the factions that come in a starter set. It's like, okay, did you really pick those factions?
Totally not predetermined by your sponsor.
Yeah, yeah, right. Whatever, it doesn't matter. And they paint them up and they assemble, paint, and play the game of 40K in one video. And so it was cool.
So this channel, because I'm not familiar with it, it's like is it like a board game, real world gaming kind of thing, not a video game thing? Like,
not a video game, no. So Yogcast is kind of a video game thing, but this branch is all about their last 15 videos, where every video is a very intensely edited battle report, is about miniature wargaming specifically. And I might have mentioned it to you, so and also the podcast, so apologies if I'm repeating myself, but I really think that Games Night, for me, has cracked a code of battle report editing and making it entertaining, because they do not give a shit about rules. They don't They don't care to explain things. They might say things in passing. It is all about the interaction between the players, the high level, what's happening on the game, getting cool, low-to-the-ground shots of the models, seeing things get taken away and blown up. It is all about just that fun, like, hucking dice, destroying large amounts of miniatures, and, like, laughing and making jokes. That's all the battle report is, and it fucking works.
Yeah.
It works.
I mean, if the point is to get people to watch it, an entertaining experience, you're going to appeal to a much larger crowd that way.
Absolutely, and it works. They play Batman the Miniatures game, totally obscure game, and that video's got, like, between 80 and 100,000 views.
I mean, that's it. I totally agree with that. It's like the more crunchy a battle report is, the more my eyes glaze over. Even in the height of me like learning and being really invested in Age of Sigmar strategy and how the armies worked and how they interacted and how the rules all worked and all that kind of stuff, and I consumed a lot of battle reports, it was still difficult to watch.
Yeah.
And I was the ideal audience.
Yeah.
At the peak of my interest, of a try-hard person, too. Like, I'm like, I just want to absorb everything. And even then, it's not fun to watch. It's not fun.
Yeah.
So, yes, make it fun. And it, what makes any game fun is not the nitty-gritty of the rules. It's the experience you have. And so, you're right. Taking that from a higher level, one storytelling and just pure entertainment, that's the way to do it.
I know. And they nail it. And so, this is like, right, I'm watching this video right when I just finished my Kill Your Friends, and like I want all of it. I want the cool narrative shots, and I have those. I want the fun interaction, we have that, but I also want people to understand what's going on. And so I, you know, in my Guild Ball video that we made together,
mm-hmm.
it starts with an interview, like a little interview about us, the factions we're playing, and then how to play the game. Like, that's so much shit to do before getting into the game. And so I like clipped that stuff out. And I put it so that it happens during the gameplay, so you get faster into it, so it's more exciting. But also, like, I explain how to play the game of A Song of Ice and Fire, and I don't know if that was the right move. Like, I don't know. I mean, I do it in a fun and excitable way. I don't spend, like, forever doing it. It's, like, 2 minutes long. But maybe I should have just fucked all the rules and just got straight into the game, you know? I don't know.
That might be worth something exciting to try
for a future one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I might Yogcast or anyone on the team, if you're watching, I might just totally lift your idea completely and just take it for my own. So fair warning.
I will steal that. Yeah, that's interesting. The reason why I was asking that, the more details about what kind of channel they were, is to like get in the brain of like why GW is choosing that.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as they're also in the UK and somebody higher up in GW like knows them or knows somebody associated.
Yeah, like, it can always be something like that.
But it's I would have guessed if they were going to start spending money, it's going to be outside of their usual sphere of influence, which this seems not entirely outside of their sphere of influence. It seems a little bit tighter than I would have expected.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, it's not like their core. It's like, these dumbasses are already doing our shit for free. Why would we give you money?
I think this is a good thing for all of us. If they're taking money, or if they're giving money to some YouTuber, that means that it's an opportunity for other people to start asking for it and getting it, hopefully.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's not about our resolutions very much. It's related to playing 40K, which made me think of it, and I wanted to bring it up before I forgot. I was like, should I bring this up in the news? It's like, knowing my fucking brain, I'm definitely going to forget, so I'm going to say it right now. Anyways, what's one of or all of your New Year's hobby resolutions?
Well, a lot of mine kind of come around to stuff related to my channel, just because a lot of my hobby is associated with my channel. But
100%.
One of my main resolution myself in 2024 is to spend more time just going with what excites me to paint and let that be the goal of wherever that goes. That's going to be the direction that I'm going to turn to more often. Not that I like, there's all these things I didn't like that I painted last year. I don't think that was the case in hindsight, but I have like ideas, or I even just look at my shelf and there's models or there's different things that excite me that I just have not gotten to. And time goes by and I'm like, I'm so far removed. Is doing a video on like how I'm going to do a Warcry warband, is like anybody going to care about that? And so I just told myself 2024, fuck it, I'm doing it anyway. Because if that's the thing I want to paint and that's exciting and that's something that I feel like I would be happy to own and then I could use, and I could actually then use that to as an excuse to get to playing some Warcry, then I'm going to do it.
100%, dude.
So that's kind of high level for me.
Okay. So focusing on things, maybe are you going to avoid taking sponsorships where you have to paint a model? Or are you going to try to steer people away from that, maybe, or something like that?
Yep. Okay. Yes. I mean, those are few and far between.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, so not that I will do it entirely. And I actually did less in 2023 than I did in 2022.
Okay.
And so each year I do less and less of those. But if it aligns really well, then it's great. I'm excited to do that.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
But yeah.
I took like I think four of those or three of those in 2023, just because they were aligning with models that I wanted to paint. And that's really all that kind of matters, honestly. So I get that. All right, cool.
Yeah. So what about, so you talked about your ideas for painting an army.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other games that you like you really want to paint for, whether it's just trying out one model or whether it's finishing up your Star Wars? What's the new one called? Shatterpoint?
Yeah. So definitely want to finish Shatterpoint, which will be so easy to do. They're coming out with some new actual Stormtrooper models from the Galactic Civil War era. You know what that is?
Nope, not even a little.
That's episodes 4, 5, and 6. So like the normal Stormtroopers, at the moment there's only clone troopers from the prequels, and those are good guys apparently. And so I don't want to use those guys for my completed Shatterpoint warband. So I need to paint Daddy V, good old Darth Vader.
Mm, yeah.
And then a Stormtrooper Sergeant, and then like, I think two normal Stormtroopers. That'll be so easy to polish that off. So I'll get that finished up, no problem. And then right now, as you guys are familiar, I'm in a narrative campaign for Necromunda. And so I will definitely exit the year with a fully painted Necromunda warband. That and also Shatterpoint. So those two are going to get finished up. The Necromunda one is definitely going to be a little bit more of a lift. I think I want to do some conversion work in there as well, because you can give a cod or a leader a greatsword, and there is no model with a fucking greatsword, and I can't get that image out of my head of my leader running at people in the 41st millennium with a fucking sword.
Just a regular ass sword.
So I just need to do it. So I'll probably finish that, but that'd be more of a lift than Shatterpoint, but they're war bands. Okay, I got to be able to finish that in a year, right?
Yeah.
John's like, I fucking know you asshole.
No, it's not about you personally.
I mean, there's a little bit.
It's well, yeah, it is. But it's about.
Yeah, it is. Actually, you know what? I take it back. I lied.
It's about the amount of weight you put into to each one of those.
Yeah, I got to paint the little dudes not so intensely. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. Which is great, you know, that you can do that. And you're willing to do that. I usually find if I'm going to do something like that, it's because I have another use for them. So it's like, I was going to paint these is, you know, maybe 80% ball sack. And then after I have them all done, be like, well, should I enter them in a competition or should I go back in, spend 2 hours in each one and then feel like I could enter them in a competition or something like that? Like there's another use for the amount of time that you're putting into it. Or like, I just really enjoy each hour that I'm putting into these, and I don't like the idea of what they'd look like in 5 hours a piece, you know? Mm, and yeah. That can be a perfectly reasonable response. There's so much around us on speed painting.
Yeah.
In YouTube and just in, like, everything you read about the painting systems, everywhere you're taught, from White Dwarf to any company, any painting company, it's all about getting your stuff done fast. And it's like, that doesn't mean that's what you're supposed to do or that's what you need to do or that's what you have to do. It's like, it's more important that you paint consistently than it is that you paint fast. Because if you're painting consistently, you can take longer and you'll get them done and they'll look better and you'll learn more. If you're just trying to paint to just get them done, I always find like when I did the whole fucking Night Lord's army, 2,000 point Night Lord's army, and I busted my ass to paint that as fast as possible. When I was done, I'm like, I got a full army painted, and I'm not proud of myself. I wasn't proud of the work, and I wasn't. And, you know, it's just like, I wish I would have set myself up in a different schedule to take more time, because I really like Night Lords for those to look cool, to look as cool as I want them to look.
How do you feel about painting on the finished models to make them look better? Is it from a place where you could reasonably improve them, or did you take a direction that does not allow for that to happen in a way that would get an outcome that you like? Are you like, man, I'm really going to struggle to make this look how I want to look based on how I started? Is that a thing you're thinking?
Mm. I have thought about doing a video where I repaint that. I continue to paint that till I get to where I want them to be. I am of the opinion, and maybe that's part of the storyline of this video, is I don't think there is such thing as you can't fix it. I don't think
okay.
that
is. Okay, so the answer to that question is no. You no. definitely can.
I okay. can. Okay. I think I can. And I think that's a fun video. And I like the idea of coming to a video with a question that I don't have the answer for and us figuring it out together.
I like that as well. That is a fun story to edit for sure. And honestly, that could really resonate with a lot of people. It's like, because like, obviously you didn't paint them poorly because you were new to the hobby. It was a very specific choice you made. But still, that applies to people who are like scared of ruining model. It's like, right. you're like, here, in my opinion, I ruined this model and I'm going to fix it in this video, which means you can too. Like that's a whole story right mm-hmm. there with a nice way to edit as well.
Yeah, I did approach a video with that where I took one of my buddy Derek's Dark
right.
Angels.
Yes.
I just painted on top of his model.
Yep.
And I didn't.
You did that. Yep.
And I didn't just. I think a fair amount of the areas I simply just painted over his. It was kind of just like a repaint job without stripping.
That's still a solution.
But like after that, going through that full experience and seeing that beginning and end, I do not feel that that you should strip models in 90% of cases.
Yeah.
You are just, all you're doing is you're giving yourself busy work to make you feel like you're doing your hobby instead of actually getting down there and fucking working.
Yeah.
Just work. Yeah. Do the work.
Just get it over with.
Yeah. But yes, I do think that would be cool. I had thought of that video with the Night Lords before because every time I look at them in my cabinet, I'm just kind of like, I wish you guys look cooler. Now, some of them look good, but like as a whole, I don't think it's a big lift. It's just you have to be very surgical in the lift.
Okay.
So we'll figure it out together, I guess.
All right.
What about you for painting stuff?
Don't say
that's
it.
Not for games.
I know you're gonna fucking say.
I was gonna say.
I don't want to disappoint you.
I was gonna say the C word.
Competition.
No, I was gonna call you a cunt, but
rude.
Are you interested, or do you foresee yourself, or is it any part of a 2024 goal to paint something that is not specifically for a game? Even if it's a model that's a gaming model, but you're just like, I'm gonna paint one space wolf.
That ain't happening. I'm done painting Space Marines
forever.
Hey man, so far I don't need them.
So far,
so good.
The call though. Yeah, this is what is that? How does it feel that you're never gonna be able to play Night Lords ever in your whole life?
See, that's the rough part. Those, John, those guys are chaos Space Marines.
Oh lordy.
I've done it.
You did give yourself a back door.
I did.
Yeah.
But no, I'm still okay on that. I don't need to pay him yet, but I can hear the call of the Emperor. You know, he's like, come to my bosom. So non-gaming stuff, it's gonna happen. So I could just say yes and then accomplish that goal for me. Like, there's no way I'm gonna paint exclusively gaming models all year long. So I don't know. I'm sorry. So I do know for a fact that I will paint something that's not gaming. But at the moment, there isn't like a display model that like I can't wait to get my hands on or something like that. But you know, it really is just like one second away from me seeing something that's like, holy shit, I really want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did this video with Fiverr where someone sculpted a Void Spirit model for me and I painted that, and that model was really nicely sculpted for that scale and it just worked out so well. And I would love to do another Fiverr video where I get someone to sculpt me a thing from a video game that I really like and just and paint it up. So that would absolutely be an opportunity for that. But nothing specific at the moment. But I mean, like regarding the C word, cunt, no competition, that new Bretonian, female is a bit of me. Like, I want to paint that model, whether it's for Golden Demon, whether it's just for my own enjoyment. Like, that is a model that I definitely want to paint. I don't have an intention of actually buying a Bretonian army. So that one.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Just having something. Something about the idea of every now and again, because I'm balls deep in it right now with competition
painting. Yeah.
And I think it's, at least for me personally, it's healthy for me to ebb and flow from that.
Yeah.
But every time I come back to it and I push myself on it, I feel like I unlock something. Not even necessarily that I'm like a world's better painter.
No.
But I learn something from that, that it, like, some of it, it stays with me when then I go back away from it. Like, my 5-hour paint jobs are so much better when, over the course of the 12 months prior, I busted my ass on one or two big projects to paint as hard as I could. I see that in my other stuff.
Yeah.
And I anyone that doesn't paint for competition, I don't think you have to. I don't think that's an important part of finding what you love in this hobby. But if you haven't done it, even if it's just paint something the best you can in a couple of days and bring it to a competition, I think it's worth your weight to just to try it. Because you could just find out you really love that side of it. Or you could find that, I didn't really love it, but I feel like I'm a better painter now, or I feel like I learned something through that process. Learning through doing is the best way for something to last with you long term. And watching a ton of videos from high level painters, joining a bunch of Patreons from these professional painters that paint the best in the world, that alone is not going to make you better.
We'll get you there.
You got to crank it out yourself.
I think you're right. You know what? If 2023 had a theme for me, it would be the theme of, you don't know what you like, Scott, and you need to try things out. Even things that I thought I didn't like, I tried them out again. I was like, actually, you know what? This is all right. I watched Star Wars prequels, and I was like, actually, these movies aren't a dumpster fire that I think they are. they're just average. Anyways, but I'm saying this because maybe, like, right now, my thoughts on it is that it's very stressful, it's very crunchy, and I don't want to paint. I'm not interested in that kind of painting. But who knows? You know, I might try it out, and I'd be like, man, you know, I really miss this. And then what you're saying is absolutely true. Like, you kind of get to a point where you're learning a thing, and all the things you're learning are easy to grasp, and they're right there for you to take. And it's like, you're learning a new thing. It's very simple. Everything makes sense. You're discovering things that people have discovered for, you know, however long this hobby's been going on for. But then once you kind of get to this place where you feel like you're plateauing, now the discoveries you're making are very personal. Mm-hmm. They're very nuanced. And, like, mm-hmm. those are the things you learn in the depths of competitive painting. You learn all these very specific things that are a little bit harder to display and show and talk about. But, like, you understand them, and then, like, they carry forward with you forever. So you are 100% right. There's definitely more for me to learn, and you learn it when you're grinding, 100%.
Yeah. And I think sometimes even I don't do a very good job of describing the painting for competition in a fair way. We use terms like grinding and stressing and having to push through and all the kind of things. And I think maybe a part of the reason why it's described that way is to kind of cushion the blow for people that haven't done it before. But I'm going to be honest with you, it's not that bad. It really, really is not that bad. The only true stressor you have is the time crunch of getting it done by the time the competition is there. And that is legitimate because oftentimes, like, you bit off more than you could chew, or you just, gosh, I didn't get any time to work on it this week. Or I'm repainting something and I feel like I'm going to have to paint it to less than what I want it to look like because I got to stay on track to finish in time. And those are the stressors. But I don't know, just sitting down and painting a thing. And, like, I will, when I've been painting on one of these dudes, if I finish one thing, I do one cloak, or I just, like, painted the one dude's hair. When I, before bed at night, I always go down, back down to the basement, and I take care of the cats. So I feed the cats, I give them water, I clean their litter box. Every single night since I started this project, as part of my routine, I take care of the cats, then I walk into my studio room, I turn on my painting light, and I look at what I painted. And I'm happy. And it could have been difficult, and it could have been stressful, and I could have so much further place to go. But something about looking at something that I tried my hardest on, and I just look at it for a second, and I'm like, I can't wait to work on it again. I can't wait to spend more time on this. And that is so fun. I don't do that when I'm like, I got to paint these 50 guys for this army. And I got to, well, next step is then I got to airbrush all the blue from above. And then next step, and I got to go and rim all of the trim and stuff. I don't go down to my basement and look at my models half painted through that. That's not fun, because there is a satisfaction of you painting a number of things to a high level. But just, like, it's just this one guy, just his stupid hair. I painted it and it kind of looks like the way I wanted the hair to look, and the light's where I wanted it to be. Or oftentimes, I go back and I look at that, and I'm like, something's not right here, because I stepped away from it, because I haven't been looking at it for 6 hours or 3 days or whatever. And like, oh, yeah, I think I know what it is now. And that feels good, too. And something about you're not building in your own excuses, because oftentimes when I'm painting something for a video, like that Tomb King, I know he's not painted perfectly. He's not attempted to paint perfectly. I don't want him to look perfect. But you kind of build in your things for yourself. It's like, well, that's not as best I can paint anyway.
Right.
I'm not putting myself out there to say, this is actually as good as I am.
Yeah.
This is as good as I am. And if it's not better than this, it's because I either have not spent enough time or I'm not better. But you don't ever get that bar to get a little bit higher unless you go to as high as you can go. And so I am never going to be a person where that's all I paint. I do not get the enjoyment in that. But I am also a person that I feel like if I spend too much time away from that, I feel like I'm selling myself short and I'm losing this weird level of satisfaction and fun that I get that I only get from painting to a high level and learning from that.
Absolutely.
That's so beautiful. Don't be a cunt.
Like whenever, like I'm like painting the Cawdor guy live on stream, and I can always tell when you're in the throes of competitive painting, because you're always like, you could put that in Golden Demon. It's like, no, I can't, John. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, this guy isn't going anywhere. Hey. I get a finalist pin. Who cares?
Necromunda is its own category.
Oh,
this
shit.
Year.
You're right.
If you
I forgot
think,
about that, actually.
If you, I don't just throw out these things willy nilly, Scott. I looked it up while you were streaming. I pulled up the website and looked up categories, and I go, oh, shit. Yeah,
there's an opportunity here.
You think there's going to be 50 well painted Necromunda bands? No, there's not. There's going to be two or three that are really, really good.
Okay, well, now I have to paint every single one super nicely.
Like, just paint them to this level, see what day it is in the month, how close we are to Adepticon, and then tell yourself, and then look at them, or take pictures, and let me and Vince and Sam look at them, and then we'll tell you, are you willing to spend another 5 hours on these? If you are, you got a shot. Or we say, these suck balls. Go home. Yeah,
don't bother.
Right. Right. So, you know, it's not like, oh, they got to go worlds better than that. I don't think they do.
Yeah,
I,
sure, for like a unit thing especially. Maybe it's a little bit of.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of factors to take into consideration.
Yeah.
You know, and then something about that, just do not even consider it. Just put in the hours, get them all looking as good as that guy. And then you have to ask yourself if you know, are you want to do that or not? That's okay. You don't have to answer today. I'm just saying it's an opportunity. I'm just planting a little seed, a little Necromunda new category seed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You planted it.
Okay.
I'm hearing it. I get it.
All right.
It's a possibility. I don't have any more resolutions, but I have other questions that I love to ask at the end of like New Year's and stuff like that.
Okay.
Do you have more resolutions you want to say though?
Not for me personally. It's in, but.
Okay, so I'm curious, was there a miniature painting related theme that you have for this year? Like, if you could look at everything you did for the hobby, videos, the topics, the what you're painting in them, what you're excited for as an individual over the course of the year, how you changed, like, what is there a hobby theme for you?
Of the year of 2023?
Year 2023, yeah. What was it?
I didn't even realize it until recently, comments both from you and Vince, but apparently 2023 was the year of color for John. It's so much of this exploration of ambient colors and undershading and working with wide variety of funky colors, vibrant colors, and starting my paint jobs through them, both from a speed paint perspective like these up to competition level, like what I brought to Nova with my bunny, and experimenting with that. And
I totally see that. I totally see that. Do you get a lot of people telling you that you paint like Craft World Studio?
Yeah. Yeah, and in multiple videos, including this one, I mentioned Craft World Studio as an inspiration.
Okay.
And it was almost like a looking at a weird unidentified bug in the wild. Like, I was just like, wow, that's weird. I have no idea how they paint. I'd never had watched any of their videos, or subscribed to their Patreon to deep dive. I just thought it was super cool and decided to go on that journey myself to figure out is this it, it, something stuck in it because I kept doing it. So,
okay, yeah.
So, and it's evolved and it's changed, but I enjoy it. It's to me, it's more about building interest in color in areas that in a lot of traditional mini painting are just kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know? And so I've enjoyed that. What about you? Do you have a year of 2023 is the year of...
I mean, for me, obviously, it's got to be painting for games, right?
Yeah, it's the year of games for Scott.
The year of games, yeah. So that's another thing that I'm worried about with the gaming stream going away is that you mentioned having a consistent time to play games. And yeah. So that for miniature war games, for me, is going away. So I don't know if that's going to affect the amount of games I play in a year. I mean, based on the start here, I'm fucking off to an amazing start. So maybe not so much, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. When we actually get into the actual thick of it and I'm actually like, you know, doing my normal daily or weekly routine. So I think painting for games, specifically learning how to paint stuff that I'm happy with for gaming. I think for AOS, I probably put too much effort into that faction as far as like the amount of hours I spent painting those models did not yield extra enjoyment I got from using them and playing with them. Now on the flip side, I feel like I didn't go far enough with the Song of Ice and Fire Army, and I learned. I was like, okay, I can actually paint to a low enough standard based on my personal standards where I will actually be disappointed with what they look like at the table. And so that was a learning experience. I'm going to have to find somewhere in between those two armies that is a level of tabletop standard plus whatever the fuck you want to call it. A level of I think this is good enough for army painting. And so, yeah, it's about honing in how much time I'm spending on my gaming stuff to the point where I enjoy it. I think it looks good.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I think that it's good to find that balance. I think that you will that planning everything out and making prep for everything, especially over a long period of time, is often not worth the stress that it gives. I think that if you still are loving games, are excited about new games, want to get more games in of a game that you really like, mm-hmm. I think that's going to happen without your Thursday stream.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
And if it doesn't, it's not like just that everything just falls into a black hole and ceases to exist. That will be taken up with something else. Maybe it's you really get into board games. Maybe it's you really get into just like painting display models or busts or maybe something else. Like that space will find a new home because you'll naturally kind of lean into whatever you're feeling. So 2024 doesn't not have to be the year of games, or it could be year of games in a different way for you.
Yeah.
You certainly were a fucking game hog this year.
Absolutely, dude.
You're just eating that slop up.
Okay, Jesus Christ. Stop. all right. I have another question for you about the year, and this might require some diving into your Instagram or whatever it's going to be. What is your favorite model that you painted this year? It could be that skeleton right there, the old world one. Wait, you painted that one this year.
Okay, yeah, I painted that this year. They don't count.
Doesn't count. Can't be your favorite this year, John. All right. Sorry.
All right, let me get to myself here. For me, it's obviously the Samurai Bunny.
It's
my favorite model I painted this year, and one that I did not go into the project ever considering that would be something that would be like my favorite paint job. I love the sculpt. This is what's the name of that company? Cobra Mode Miniatures, and I love all their stuff. And this was a cool one. This was one of the few like sponsored videos that I did where I painted one of their models. And they just kind of let me choose, like, you know, whatever you love. I'm like, awesome. I love so much your stuff. So I painted him up. And it's one of those where I ended up spending more time than I thought I was planning on to for a video to do it because I just enjoyed it. And it was kind of a unlocking this fun with color experiment. Kind of this was the pinnacle of that, I think, for me in the year of just really having fun with it. I didn't paint it so much that I actually painted the back of the model, however. So he's largely unpainted on the back, which is the reason I only got a bronze and Nova. Because I didn't paint the front or didn't paint the back.
Eric told me that story as well at Monty. That's awesome. That's a great one. Would you say that's where it started for you? Like the whole idea of using fun and vibrant colors in your shadows and starting from that point of view, or is that?
No, it's not the first. I did a number of models prior that were like my first experiments in it. Actually, the first model that I experimented with it, I think, was was the Space Dwarf dude. That was the first model I did. And that was back in...
That was before the bunny?
September 2022 was that. God, that was September, and then the bunny was February.
Okay.
So a couple months later. But yeah, there was a number of ones, but that was the first time I did it to... trying to do it to a higher level. Like, okay. It's kind of funny. You can throw a bunch of funny colors around and then put some base colors and highlights on top of it, and it can look cool. But can it be to a higher level is the next question. So, yeah, that was my favorite. What about you?
Man, I struggled. I really liked Halgrim, the shiny metal skeleton guy that I painted.
Yeah.
I really did TMM there in a way that I thought, wow, this is, like, really impressive looking to me. But I think I got to give it to Pizza Boy. And I think it's for a similar reason that you had with the bunny, and this has happened to me before, where I go into a project with such little expectation, and then I come out of it, and I'm just like, wow, you know, I tried a new thing. I painted a modern character with no fantasy or sci-fi elements. It's just like, all this was like, this is, you know, this is not going to be fun. You know, experimenting and challenging yourself can often, I mean, for me, at the moment, isn't like the most exciting prospect. But then I painted in that comic book style, and I was like, damn, this was really enjoyable. It turned out okay, not super convincing comic book style, but it still looks good at the very least. Had that fun backdrop. I've never done a backdrop before on a bust, and I did a modern character, and I really enjoyed doing it. I've painted black skin tones before, and I've sucked at it in the past, and this was okay. And so it's like a lot of things, just very low expectations, very high outcome.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of sticks out in my head as a cool moment in the year.
And I think that maybe there's something that goes to show there that, like, the thing you hype yourself up about the most, the thing that you're so invested in before you even begin, is not equate to it being the most influential or the most exciting or the most memorable experience you had and model you painted that year in any given year. Oftentimes you'll put the more weight and the focus and the drive on it when you're more pumped on the front end. But it's just no guarantee of anything.
It isn't, yeah.
You know, if you're feeling that, if you're getting into a project and you're feeling that, like, just enjoyment and wanting to sink more time into it, just go with it. Don't rush it. Like, you'll probably learn more and be more satisfied at the end from that than just thinking that I have to hold true to what I thought before I even picked up the paintbrush.
Yeah, you can't feel imprisoned by that. Yeah, yes. Your ideas. I have one last question for you regarding the new year, and this might be the same question as the first question, but is there something that you want to change about your YouTube channel specifically in 2024? It could be that, you know, I'm gonna make more videos about things that I care about, that I want to paint. So it could be the same answer as that first one, but do you have something you want to change about the channel in this year?
I think my plan or my direction for 2024 for my channel is to keep it, or I don't want to say return to, because I don't know if I've varied so far from it, but I really want to make it a priority, is to go to the fun and me having fun and me just being me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's like there's all these businessy sides. You're running your own small business. There's all these other, you know, balls you need to juggle. And I try to set myself up through the end of 2023 to be able to not stress about that much stuff as much. And so I can just focus on the fun stuff, you know, just focus on why I enjoy doing this and making videos that excite me. And so that's where I want to go to. I want to have some fun painting and do weird stuff and see if you guys like it. That's pretty much it. It's pretty high level, but, like, I feel like that trickles down to a lot of choices that you make during a week for your business.
It absolutely does. Is the question of, do I want to do this? Like, that's a question I never ask. You know, it's like, is this gonna allow me to, you know, pay the bills so I can support my employees so they can finish their projects on time so I can have time to do what I want to do? It's like, no. Do I want to do this? Do I want to paint this model? Do I want to do this video idea? No. Okay, I'm not gonna do that then.
Yeah,
that's an important question to ask.
Yep.
I feel that in a huge way for myself as well. Like, that I shared a quote in my garbage year-end video, which was like, if you pander to any intermediary while doing a creative project, it diminishes the value of that project. And so that's a huge thing. It's like, if there's anything in the way of me and the viewer of my videos that's, like, dictating the content, it's probably making it worse or making it harder to make that video at the very least. So yeah, that's a good takeaway, I would say. welcome to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this entire episode, and welcome to TUPS 2024 season. We're happy to be here. We're happy that you're here still with us, and we're looking forward to another year of podcasting.
Yeah, this is it. I don't know, dude. This is the fifth year, so we'd had four full years before this. Does it seem like it's been that long?
No.
It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't feel like it was that long ago. We were like wedged into a corner in your basement in our first couple. And I haven't gone back and listened to some of those original ones, but I'm feeling like we have not grown as people at all.
Definitely not. No, we're still the same. Hopefully you're still the same, so you're looking forward to hearing about this shit I'm about to do. If you like the podcast and you want to support it, there are a number of ways you can do that. I think the best way to support us is through Patreon, which gets you access to an extended episode, about 20, 30 minutes longer. We talk about things that we tried out in the hobby. This year it was a pigment washing and trying out Fanatic paints for me. For John, he was talking about a new way of speed painting and how it impacted how fast he can get a nice model while working with what makes contrast paints hard to work with. That was a terrible explanation.
Trust us.
He does it much better than me. You also have opportunities to leave suggestions for topics for podcast episodes. And we use those. We make sure to credit you. And you also get access to nudes. No, just kidding. That doesn't happen.
Oh.
You can also support the podcast if you're buying merch. You can pick up some long sleeve tees, some t-shirts, some joggers, some cups, all with cool three different designs that we've had made for us over the year that feature TUP in all of its food-based glory. Aside from that, telling your nerd friends about our podcast, sharing the good word to people you think might enjoy it, giving us a review on wherever you listen to podcasts, listening to the podcast on YouTube with ads enabled, whitelisting our channel. We play an ad every 30 minutes. Those are all free ways to support the podcast without spending a dime.
Yeah, wow, that was good. Almost as if you've been doing this for 4 years.
I'm a professional.
Yes. Well, we will see you for episode 2 of season 5 in a fortnight. And until then, we will catch you on the
flippity flop.